Good morning. It's 11 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up will be Health Watch. Today, host Ellen Goldsmith speaks with Dr. Julie Brilli. And at 11:30, U.S. Representative Louise Slaughter talks about how the routine use of antibiotics in livestock contributes to the growing threat of antibiotic-resistant infections in humans. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for this radio station. Your support keeps KBOO on the air. And please stand by.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, and I am your host every second Monday of the month. Today we will be speaking with Dr. Julie Brilli, co-founder of the Food as Medicine Institute at the National College of Natural Medicine. Improving our health through changing the way we eat has been in the news, from the recent USDA update on dietary guidelines to the PBS airing of Michael Pollan's In Defense of Food, in which he reminds us to eat food, mostly plants, not too much. But right here in Portland, Oregon, there is an institute dedicated to just that and giving people the hands-on experience of changing the way we eat through cooking classes and symposiums and special events. The Food as Medicine Institute at the National College of Natural Medicine, the oldest naturopathic medical college in the United States, offering graduate programs in naturopathic and Chinese medicine, integrative medicine research, integrative mental health, global health, and nutrition. Dr. Julie Brilli is a naturopathic physician, educator, and, as I said, co-founder of the Food as Medicine Institute. The Food as Medicine Institute is dedicated to educating people that a plant-focused whole foods diet is a key to health. It aims to foster a healthier relationship between food and the community's relationship to food. Dr. Brilli teaches in the Food as Medicine Institute in the Food as Medicine Everyday program, which we'll talk about later, as well as the Masters of Science of Nutrition program. She also practices as a naturopathic physician at Azula Wellness Center in downtown Portland. She's a popular speaker in Portland's thriving health and food culture community. Dr. Brilli, welcome to Health Watch, and thank you for coming down to the studio.
Thank you so much, Ellen. It's really great to be here.
So lots happening. This past week, as I said, the United States Department of Agriculture issued these new dietary guidelines, which sounds like a positive step moving forward in guiding the public towards healthier eating. Less sugar, we should only have 10% of that in our daily diet, which equals, I think, one can of Coca-Cola if you're drinking that, hopefully not, and less saturated fat. But Marion Nessel, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University, and is a great contributor to the conversation about food and health, said per CBS News that there's something missing in the message. And actually, the junk food industries should consider these guidelines a win, because there's no direct messaging in these guidelines that says, don't eat junk food, don't eat processed food, don't eat so much meat, and don't drink soda. So I know that the Food as Medicine Institute addresses just these questions and these problems that people face. So I'd like you to just start by telling us a little bit about it and how you're going about helping people change the way they eat.
Sure. So I think it is important that policies change and that there is that top-down approach. But I think, you know, where the Food as Medicine Institute and where the FAME series really hits home is that we're working with individuals and families. So regardless of policy changes, it still is right right now up to individuals to make the decision when they're going to the grocery store or ordering out at a restaurant, for example. So that's where our work takes place, is in the community and teaching people the skills that they need, the nutrition knowledge that they need, so that they make the best decision that they can.
So I know that in 2010, the seeds of this was the Ending Childhood Obesity Project, which I was very enthusiastic about, and know that you really touched a lot of families, and that was through generous funding through Bob Moore of Bob's Red Mill. And so talk to us about what the Food is Medicine Every Day program, which came out of that, is.
Sure.
Like, how long is it? What do people do? What do they learn in that
Perfect.
Program?
Yeah. So you're right. In 2010, the National College of Natural Medicine received a very generous donation from Bob and Charlie Moore of Bob's Red Mill. Basically, they learned about a naturopathic physician's training in using food as medicine, both to prevent disease and treat disease. So it was a great partnership for us to create a community-based program to actually go out into the community and share our naturopathic nutrition knowledge. So yes, initially we created the ECHO Project, Ending Childhood Obesity, which morphed into the Food as Medicine Every Day series. Basically, we aren't a obesity prevention or treatment program. We are working with everyday families across all walks of life in different locations with diverse communities and teaching them these skills. So currently the FAME series, Food as Medicine Every Day, is a 12-week program. And we meet weekly for 90 minutes. It is led by a naturopathic physician, which allows us to get to that deeper information about how nutrition and food choice affects our health and our disease process. Each week in class, we have a different nutrition topic that builds upon the week before, and we make and create a meal every week that we then enjoy as a community at the end of class.
So that makes learning about changing the way we eat a real experience that people have together in community.
Well, it's what's missing. I mean, there's a you can find nutrition knowledge anywhere, online, in books, but until you actually go to a class and make kale chips or put dark leafy greens in a soup or learn how to make homemade chili, it's very hard for someone to actually go home and do that.
Right. And I remember in the Ending Childhood Obesity Project, you were in churches, you were in schools, you were in a supermarket, weren't you, out in Banks, Oregon?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are still out in Banks, Oregon, a rural community about 25 miles west of downtown Portland. And one of the local grocery stores said, you know, we want to bring in more quote-unquote health food, but we aren't sure if the people will buy it. And in that community, people were actually driving into Portland to get their health food, and so they were hoping to shift what was on their shelves. So we came in and said, hey, why don't we educate your customer base so they know how to use these foods and in turn will purchase them from your store. And so it's been a really great model where, you know, what we know about educational programs is that if you're not changing access to food as well, you may not be actually helping people make sustainable changes. So
And that went pretty well out there, didn't it? It was the Thriftway, wasn't it?
Yes, it's the Jim's Thriftway. And, you know, them reporting back to us is that they have increased their sales of produce, which they've been monitoring. They're bringing in more organic produce. They're bringing in things like flaxseed and healthier oils. And they've even wanted to use some of our FAME recipes in their deli. So it truly has been a great model for us in terms of affecting change in a small town.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you're also at a Coffee Creek Correctional Facility as well, right?
Correct. We have had a grant to work at the Women's Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, Oregon. These are women who are in minimum security prison, so they will be going home to their families, and they want this information. They need this information. They're becoming sicker while incarcerated. The diet that they're fed is, less than optimal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, initially when we started teaching these women, we thought, you know, we would be affecting them for when they were released, you know, addressing when you go home, you can do this, you can do that, and here are some skills. But what we actually found was the women were making changes while incarcerated. So making better choices in their cafeteria, making better choices through the food that they were able to purchase. In addition, at Coffee Creek, they have a community garden. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. beautiful. They produce more organic produce than probably any of the community gardens here in Portland. So it's probably been one of our best examples of a farm-to-table fame class, which is not in a place you would think. So it's been amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So when people come into the Food is Medicine Every Day program, what are the challenges that you see that people are facing?
That's a great question. I think it's very different for the populations that we're working with. I can speak to a couple. The classes that we teach in Charlie's Kitchen at the National College of Natural Medicine tend to be people of a higher level of education and nutrition knowledge. But when they come to class, they are still lacking the skills that they need to actually make the changes. So they may know everything about grass-fed beef and pasture-raised eggs and how to soak their beans and grains, but they haven't ever done it. And so those classes tend to focus on more of the kitchen skills, where for a different population, they really may not know how to read a food label yet or even understand the difference between a protein, a carb, or a fat, for example. So I think the beauty of our program is that it's very adaptable to the different populations, and we learn pretty quickly what that group needs, and we're able to hopefully address that.
And are people coming into those classes with specific health issues, or they're coming because their physician said, hey, you need to eat better, or their naturopathic physician said, hey, go to this class? So what are the health conditions that people are coming in there with as well?
Sure. So I think a lot of people are coming in with blood sugar dysregulation.
So like pre-diabetic, yep, or diabetic.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we started a FAME research study recently for people with pre-diabetes and the effect of the FAME series on that population, which is growing. Mm-hmm. But also autoimmune disease, heart disease, cancer, all walks of life. So I would say it's quite a wide variety. And of course, we're not asking for that information when people come in. I mean, regardless of what disease you might have or what your health goals are, I mean, everybody needs to be eating more whole foods.
Absolutely. So if you just tuned in, this is Health Watch on KBOO, and today we're speaking with Dr. Julie Briley, naturopathic physician and co-founder of the Food as Medicine Institute at the National College of Natural Medicine here in Portland. So I know that you talk a lot about in the program, you have skills where there are a lot of different kinds of skills people need. I mean, there's a skill of, okay, this is a squash, a winter squash, and mm-hmm. we can eat this, and we can eat the skin if it's organic, et cetera. This is how you cook rice. This is how you cook beans. But I know in your program, you also spend quite a bit of time talking about food labels. So mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, could you talk about that a little bit and how why you do that and how it's beneficial to people?
We do think that food label reading is probably one of the most important skills you can have. When you walk into the grocery store these days, just about every food item will have a food label on it. Of course, we want to aim towards the foods that don't have labels on it, and those are going to be primarily whole foods. So your fruits and vegetables, your meats, your bakery items, your bulk grains and beans, for example. But other than that, everything will have a food label, and it's pretty complicated. There's a lot of deceiving information that can be on a food label. And what we found is that a lot of people will tend to look at the nutrition facts section of the label first, which is where all the numbers and percentages are. But when you're initially screening a food product for nutrition information, that's not going to tell you what's in the food. So we use a different approach to food label reading where we have people look directly at the ingredient list. That's going to give you the best information about how processed that food is. So we talk about looking at the length of the ingredient list and reading it and making sure everything's a recognizable food item.
Right. They say if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it, right?
You got it. So that's what we're teaching and telling people, get away from the calories, get away from the percentages. For now, there is some useful information on there, but you know, there's a big difference between two peanut butters that might have the same nutrition fact information, but one has added sugar and trans fats in it, might have the same, you know, grams of protein that one that is just peanuts.
So you're really telling people, read the label to see what the food is that's in this food.
You got it.
And so what are you, I mean, I have an idea, but can you share with our listeners what they need to stay away from besides those unpronounceable things that are in foods?
Sure. So I think a couple big ones. One is trans fats.
And can you tell us what trans fats
are? Sure. So trans fats are a man-made fat. They've basically taken a fat or an oil and chemically changed it so that it is very shelf stable, which is really great for packaged and processed foods, but not so great for our health. We know that the FDA has made changes so that trans fats will be removed from foods, but that's going to take several years. So for now, the only way to know for sure is to look at that ingredient list and look for the word partially hydrogenated oils. The tricky part comes in when you're just looking at the nutrition facts section. It can still say 0 grams of trans fats if it has less than 0.5 grams per serving. And so, if you're just looking at that nutrition fact area, it might say zero. You think you're good. But if you go to that ingredient list, if you see partially hydrogenated oils, it still has trans fats in it.
So can you just educate our listeners a little bit and tell them why these aren't so good for us?
Yeah. So these are, like I said, they're not a whole food. So they're not naturally occurring. And they are linked to heart disease. Trans fats are linked to Alzheimer's disease. So basically, they can harm our brain and our heart. And they really don't have a place in a whole foods diet.
So, but we need fat. Our brain likes fat, our bodies like fat, our nervous systems like fat. So what should people look for in terms, because also fat is very satisfying too. Mm-hmm. It helps you feel just calmer. It keeps you mm-hmm. warmer in the winter and all of that. So what kinds of fats could people look for to include in their diet?
So, you know, we try to say, stay away from use this, not that.
Okay.
So instead, we try to think of a principle that would work. And when you think of whole foods, think of foods that are naturally high in fat that may be lightly processed into an oil or a fat that you can cook with. So things like butter, things like unrefined coconut oil, unrefined avocado oil, even some of the nut oils that are higher in fat. So when you think of something like an olive, for example, an olive is a naturally fatty food. So all you have to do is squish that olive one time and you can get this beautiful oil from it. Compare that to something like corn. You don't think of corn as a naturally fatty food, but yet here we are processing it into corn oil. So to me, that's not a whole food fat where some of these other ones, avocado, coconut, butter, olive, are less processed whole fat oils that you can use some
right.
for.
But you can also eat the whole avocado, have the nuts.
Yeah,
themselves.
Technically you don't have to use an oil.
Okay,
yeah.
So what about fats in dairy products, for instance? A lot of people have some degree of lactose intolerance. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so dairies can be a little more complicated because there are people who don't digest dairy. There's lactose intolerance, there's a dairy allergy, a dairy sensitivity. If you do tolerate dairy fine, then the fats in dairy are great. And we would recommend using whole dairy products as opposed to low-fat or no-fat dairy products. Again, that is a whole food. It has not been processed to remove anything from it.
Right. So, but it's tricky. Now we're getting into the sugar part of this whole thing. Because when you said, you know, eating the whole fat of the mm-hmm. dairy, you know, and then you go to the yogurt section, which is like,
oh my gosh,
it's like a candy store. You know, you get these, of course, they've made smaller containers of yogurt now. So there's like 4 ounces.
Yeah,
it's less. And there's 28 grams of sugar in it, which is equal to 7 teaspoons of sugar.
Yeah.
And you're trying to imagine putting 7 teaspoons of sugar in this little thing of yogurt. So and then, of course, it's 0% fat.
Oh, my gosh.
Or 1% fat. So, OK.
Yeah.
Let's
yogurt's a big one. This is one we talk about in class starting on day one, because everybody, and it's not anybody's fault that they think yogurt is a healthy food. I mean, we were told it was a healthy food.
And that's because of the probiotics in it and the lactobacillus.
Protein, great protein snack, and that's all true. But yes, the sweetened yogurts, the one with added sugar in it, it's a lot of added sugar, almost as much as a Coca-Cola. Like you said, it's like a candy. So yogurt is still good, absolutely. You just have to get unsweetened yogurt. And if you like it sweet, that's okay too. You can add chopped fresh fruit to it or frozen fruit to it. And if you really like it sweet, add 1 teaspoon of raw honey or maple syrup to it, or a little bit of stevia, for example. There's no way you would add the amount of sugar that the food industry is adding. Like you said, you wouldn't add 7 tablespoons of honey to your yogurt. It just wouldn't taste good. So I think there's these are the tricks and the skills that can really shift your diet, but you're not making gigantic changes. Small changes can have a huge impact.
Absolutely. So this, just like we need fat, we also do need sweet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a flavor from our perspective in Chinese medicine. It's calming, it's harmonizing, it's nourishing. It helps us in many, many ways. So what are some ways that people can get sweet in their life that is satisfying? We know that like chocolate sweet is satisfying because of the fat and the caffeine and mm-hmm. all of that aspect. So, you know, when people are trying to change and cut back on their sugar, but they still are craving that sweet, what kinds of recommendations would you make at the Food as Medicine Institute?
Well, the good thing is that nature produces a very abundant source of whole food, sweet foods, all of the fruits. I mean, that's an easy one to think of. But we can also think of vegetables that are more sweet. So carrots and sweet potatoes and bell peppers, foods like that, sugar snap peas. Those are all naturally sweet, but you're getting fiber and all those amazing vitamins and minerals. I would also look at spices. I mean, adding cinnamon and ginger and spices like that can warm you and sweeten your food. So I think, you know, there's a lot we can do with whole food sources of sweetness.
And also probably using nut butters with some sweetener
Absolutely.
In it and a little cacao or something to kind of give you that satisfaction without the heavy-hitting dose.
So add some protein and fat to that naturally sweet food and you have a nice, complete, whole balanced snack right there or meal.
Yeah. And what about stevia? Because stevia is, out there a lot and it's a sweetener. What's the news on stevia, on its benefit and on when it's too much, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
So stevia comes from a plant. It's the leaf of a plant, and it has a chemical in it that tastes sweet on our taste bud. It has a glycoside in it. So it is a whole food because it comes from a plant and we don't process it. And in South America, they use it quite readily. When I was in the Peace Corps in Paraguay, we were just picking the stevia leaves right off the plant, adding it to mate, for example. Here in the United States, we've now taken the leaf of that plant, and it has been processed either into a powder or you'll find liquid stevia. You can get all sorts of flavored liquid stevia. So it's a fine line on still encouraging all that sweetness in your food. You can still create extra cravings for sugar just by having a lot of sweet tasting food in the diet. Stevia doesn't spike our blood sugar like regular sugar, so there's that benefit. And it's not an artificial sweetener, so it's not a chemical that can be harmful to us. So I think it's okay if you're using it every once in a while and making sure you're getting the less processed forms of stevia.
Right. So we're really talking about balance here and getting a broad variety of foods. So it's not just, oh, I need sugar sweet all the time,
yes.
which people seem to get through refined carbohydrates and sugar, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go back to the Food as Medicine Every Day program and the skills that people are getting. They're getting, you know, they're able to read food labels and understand just, you know, beneficial foods, some cooking skills. A lot of people talk about, you know, the challenge of time. You know, it's interesting. I read somewhere recently that people spend more time watching cooking shows in the United States than they do cooking,
know.
And I know just from my cooking, you can put together a quick meal that's really healthy and yummy at the same time. And I'm just wondering how you address this challenge, because it's real. People are super busy, overscheduled, work late, et cetera.
Absolutely. I think we try to approach that through two different ways. One is that, like you said, we're trying to show that you can create a simple, healthy, whole foods meal in not a lot of time. And we do that by actually making it in class and having that experience of saying, oh, it didn't take that long to make this meal. I could do that at home versus, you know, looking online, finding a recipe and thinking, oh, no, I don't have time to do that. So I think the hands-on part of it and the way that we've chosen the recipes are so that you're learning a skill that you can use in several different areas. And then I think the second thing we're trying to address is we do have to slow down a little bit. We do have to create more time for food and cooking. You know, our pace of life here in the United States is so, so fast, and food became quick and fast and cheap, and that became the norm. So we do kind of have to reverse a little bit and go back to the times when we were creating a big meal on Sunday that we can use leftovers, or planning our meals ahead of time, you know, letting things cook in the crock pot while you're at work. There are strategies to make it go fast, but at the same time, you know, this is worth your time. This is your health. And this is the number one thing you can do that can affect your health that you have control over. So yes, we can make it as quick as possible, but you likely will have to put a little more time into it.
A little bit, just a little
just
bit.
Just a little. But little changes.
Right.
Yeah.
I know that on another show I did, I interviewed one of your participants, so I can mention her name because she, Patricia Warren.
Oh, I love her. Yes.
And she just was a complete convert, and she lost an enormous amount of weight. Her cholesterol went down. Her blood sugars went down. And she actually promoted it at her organization. It's Delta Theta Sigma. Is that it?
June Key Delta Center. But yes, I think that's the name of the sorority.
Yeah, it's the oldest African-American women's sorority in the country. And they have had programs there, et cetera. So, you know, it's great to see people's the after effect. Mm-hmm. You know, she just felt like she was a different person when it was all complete.
Yes, I think, you know, when people say, wow, that's a 12-week program, that is so long. How do people commit to that? Shouldn't you shorten the class? And we've heard that for the last 5 years. And, you know, it every time by week 12, people are saying, I can't believe it's over. What am I going to do now? I want to come back. Can we have more classes? And people have. They've repeated the class several times. So this is lifelong, and we want those converts. And they will have to revisit and continue to learn and practice and shop and cook and do everything. It's not like, okay, you're done after you take this class.
We
it's
always
just
have
the beginning.
And you always have to eat dinner.
So you always have to eat dinner.
Why not eat it with a bunch of people and have a good
Absolutely.
Time?
Absolutely.
So tell us, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. What's upcoming? I know you have some upcoming classes and you have a symposium coming up here. So let us, our listeners, know how they can participate.
Sure. So we are in our third year of doing our annual symposium. It's the Food as Medicine Symposium. It's coming up on Saturday, February 13th. Basically, we are inviting everyone. We are inviting the public, anyone who wants to come to the symposium. It's a one-day event, and we have some amazing speakers this year. We have Sally Fallon coming to do a seminar. She's the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. We also have Jo Robinson, she's a local author of Eating on the Wild Side. She'll be speaking to the public. And then also Deanna Minich is coming to speak as well. So in order to find out about that, you can come to the website. It's foodasmedicineinstitute.com. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, where we regularly give updates on events. And you can also email me directly if you have questions.
And what's your email address so people can reach you?
Dr. Julie Briley, my name, at gmail.com is a great way if you have some questions.
That's B-R-I-L-E-Y.
B-R-I-L-E-Y. Uh-huh. And then also our FAME series. So the very series we've been talking about during this program, it goes on every single quarter. So our next series will be starting in April, and you'll find that information on our website as well.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Julie Briley, for being with us here today on Health Watch. I hope everyone out there is all fired up about getting some support. And so please do check out the Food as Medicine Institute. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Julie Briley, naturopathic physician and co-founder of the Food as Medicine Institute at the National College of Natural Medicine here in Portland, Oregon. You have been listening to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host. And tune in next month on Monday, February 8th, when I'll be speaking with Wolfram Alderson, who's the executive director of the Institute of Responsible Nutrition, created by Dr. Robert Lustig, on the impact of sugar and what it has, the impact that it has on our health. Thank you again.
Malibu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running from January 15th through February 8th. Real Music explores the lively interplay between sound and image, music and culture. Opening night, January 15th, will be Roxy the Movie, directed by Frank Zappa. Filmed over three nights in December 1973 at the Roxy Theater in Hollywood, Roxy the Movie encapsulates the qualities that made Frank Zappa a revolutionary musical pioneer. That's January 15th at 9:15 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission